Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers and compelling conversations regarding parenting and the art world. These conversations create a space for inclusivity and support for artist mothers worldwide. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and podcast host. I'm so grateful you are tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
I find that this openness and time to work also helps to kind of soothe that maternal part of me that has to let them go. They're not hanging out with me. We're not doing all these great creative things as a family because they're busy and growing and moving on as they should. So it's kind of like this beautiful opening, but it's also helping me with the process and that now I have this new thing to nurture, because that element of nurturing is shifting.
Today, I'm delighted to interview two amazing artists. Let's welcome Lisa Alberts and Aaron Patton McFerrin to the podcast. Lisa Alberts is a multidisciplinary artist interested in the maternal experience. Through alternative photography, textiles, and soft sculpture, she explores the intersection of motherhood and the physicality of caregiving, investigating how the maternal experience feels in the body. Process is central to Lisa's work, and her children are often active participants in her process. Lisa received her BFA in Fine Art from Kendall College of Art and Design, followed by graduate work in photo theory at Durham University in Durham, UK. She has participated in artist residencies at Stay Home Gallery in Paris, Tennessee, and online with Empty Room, and is a current exhibiting artist with the Farmington Hills Public Art Program. Her work has been exhibited nationally. Lisa, her partner, and their two children live, work, and play in Farmington Hills, Michigan, outside of Detroit. And Aaron Patton McFerrin creates art from her studio in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and along the waterways of Fort Wayne and bodies of water she discovers while traveling. Her creative practice is grounded in meditation and involves constant exploration, process, and experimentation. Aaron continually makes art while maintaining her career as an established art educator, plus parenting two creative teenagers with her partner of 25 years. She was awarded the Solo Exhibit Award winner for the ArtLink Gallery's 43rd Members Showcase, which is an exhibit set for May of 2022. She has been nominated for the Arts United Margaret Ann Keegan Award in 2015 and was Teacher of the Year finalist for Fort Wayne Community Schools in 2017. She was invited to the Boulder Journey School Conference in Colorado to further her art studio practice in the Reggio Emilia approach. In addition to her solo show at ArtLink Gallery in Fort Wayne, Indiana, she will be showing at the Marcia Evans Gallery in Columbus, Ohio next fall. So I am thrilled to speak with Aaron and Lisa today, these two wonderful Midwest living cyanotype making artist mothers. Thank you both for joining me on the podcast.
Thank you.
Thanks for the great introduction.
You're welcome. That was a lot to read. but always good to provide some context so people know who you are. And I'll just further that point with just saying that Lisa and I have been connected through the Artist Mother community kind of from the early days of the podcast, I feel like, and even maybe a little bit earlier on Instagram. My Instagram life just kind of all blurs, Lisa. You'll have to forgive me. Some people are like, yeah, we've been friends for Instagram for like, I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't even, like the context of time and social media is just lost on me.
Absolutely. It's strange.
Yeah. And then Erin, I met because she's my daughter River's art teacher at, my kids go to an arts magnet school in Fort Wayne, Indiana, which many of you know, we recently moved to a year and a half ago, and, just feel so lucky that my kids are in the school. And then, you know, like they're in this arts magnet school, but then I find out that my daughter's teacher is like an amazing artist mother who has teenagers and who has a thriving career. And I'm like, this is why I moved, so I can connect with people like Aaron. Amazing.
Oh, we are so lucky to have you and your beautiful baby. Oh, you're incredible.
And of course, River, just my daughter, just adores you. So that was part of it too, was, you know, she just loves the days. She has two times a week she has art, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
They almost get to spend a full day in the studio.
Yes. And the day I knew we could be friends was the day that you sent like a, you know, you guys send like a little slideshow or stuff like often home from school, just in the teacher newsletter. And the little 5-year-old kids were doing a critique of their work. And there was like a picture, and I was like, oh my God, we can be friends. Like this is not your average elementary school art teacher. Like it was this picture of River standing up in front of her class, like talking about her work.
Oh yeah. Like a pro. Yes. It is so amazing.
I was like, oh my God.
Well, thank you.
Yes. Yes. So let's dive in. As I mentioned, I just feel like you both had this connection of, you know, living in the Midwest and having cyanotypes be a huge part of your practice. And, you know, we're just connected because I know you both, and I thought it would be a great conversation. So let's start with you, Lisa. Can you share something about your childhood that you feel like connects to your life as an artist? Just curious to know if art was like always a part of your life, or where you feel like that thread starts for you.
Yeah, I was a very expressive child. And so I was like a performer. I like, even before my parents enrolled me in dance, which was my first love, I would just like, there's videos of me just like dancing and singing in our living room for like hours. I mean, before I went to school, that's like how my mom would spend her days with me, is I would just perform for her. So I'm sure it was a joy. But I think just I have always had this need to be really expressive of myself, mm-hmm. and like my inner life and thoughts. And so for the majority of my childhood and into young adulthood, that was really through dance and specifically ballet. And I ended up having an injury in my late teens. And so I like decided that I should probably go to college because I can't really dance anymore. And just decided I would give visual arts a try. And, you know, kind of the rest is history, I guess. But yeah.
Well, and that's another thread of connection, because Erin's daughter is, do you call her a ballerina?
Yes, my daughter is a dancer. She studied ballet and then is going to pursue dance in college and as a career. So as an artist parent, it's been really fun to encourage that journey for her. But Lisa, I too studied ballet.
Amazing.
It's a huge part of my life. And then I was in theater and other forms of dance performance and God forbid show choir with the jazz hands and all. You know? So that performance aspect has always been a part of me. And my family, I come from a family of musicians. So I also studied and played and performed music as well. So all of those elements of the arts were always part of me, but art was mine. And that was also something that I kind of knew I would always do while I did ballet, while I could, while I did theater, while I could, and always had this feeling that it was just mine and there for me.
So interesting.
That's so cool.
Yeah. I had no idea that kind of dance connection was there.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew your daughter, Erin, was a dancer, but, and then I knew that you take the hip hop class at, what's that dance collective called?
Oh yes. At the Dance Collective.
The Dance Collective.
Group 3. And as a gift to myself, because I realized how important dance is for me. And maybe I know it's been intentional because it's what my daughter wanted to pursue. I wanted dance to just be completely her own. And I didn't want it to be, you know, well, I did this too. Or, and so I did sign up for a theater jazz class, which is more my style of movement, and for the new year. And I'm so excited.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Erin, was there anything else you wanted to add just about your own childhood and connecting to your life as an artist today?
Just that element of exploring all the things, everything creative was was always a part of my childhood. And I was lucky to be around it in my home. My parents played music. My mom is a retired art teacher, so she taught art as well. So these were just things that were part of my vocabulary at home, which I am really grateful to have that background.
I love it. Okay, so let's talk a little more specifically about the work that each of you make. And though you both create cyanotype-based work, I feel like the end result of your work and your processes are actually pretty different when you think about sort of some of the things that you're processing and what the work ends up looking like. Erin, could you talk a little bit more specifically about what your work looks like and some of your process and like what you're kind of making right now?
Sure. I use the original 1843 recipe by Sir John Herschel, where I mix the chemistry in my basement and apply it to thick watercolor paper. And then I use that paper in waterways to kind of catch the current to create images. Mm-hmm. So as the water stops, the processing of the cyanotype in the sun, it stops the changing and the darkness of it. I'm able to work with that to create an image. So it's kind of like a monotype process or a painting with the natural environment, working with the water, the current, the sunlight, the wind, anything else that's around the sand that creates those blue images that are kind of wave-like. But it's not a passive type of image, where there are some artists that try to catch a wave, for example. Mm-hmm. And so it's just a one shot where I will deliberately fold the paper, bend it, dip it in different ways to create a composition or an image.
Okay. And so there's this element of, you know, it's not just like you're exposing it to nature and whatever happens. It's more like you are using nature as a tool to create your compositions in collaboration with like the cyanotype.
A collaboration, exactly. That is how I think about it. Yeah, it's a collaboration. And for me, it's very much about marking time and place. Hmm. I like doing site-specific work, and the work evolved from my meditation practice of several years, where it became a very calming ritual for me to go sit by the water and create.
Yeah, so that was kind of my next question, was just talking a little bit about like travel and specific, like your process being so site-specific. I know I don't mean travel in the sense that necessarily you're going on large trips, but I know that that sometimes does occur for you. But just, you know, your studio has to become a specific place along water or where there is water or some sort of element that you're wanting to collaborate with. So could you talk a little bit about like, how did that happen? Where, you know, instead of this experience of I'm just an artist in a studio making work, you decided to kind of combine, I don't know, I guess your love of nature or being outside, or like what was that sort of impetus there?
Yes, I did want to find a way to work outside and be in nature and work with elements that were in a sustainable, non-toxic way. And so I was inspired by I'm drawn to the water. And it was on a trip to North Carolina. I packed paper and took it with me and just played with it at the beach to see what would happen. And when I came home, there's always that longing of being away from the ocean and not having the water to look at. And I really noticed how I felt different watching the water, and I missed that when I came home. And so that's what made me reevaluate the water around me. And our city is founded on these three rivers. Mm-hmm. And I can walk to a river from my house. It is that close. And so that's when it occurred to me to use the resources around me and use the waterway and try to recreate that experience I had playing at the beach right behind my house. And it's not directly behind my house. There's a park that, you know, but I can drive there, and it's on the way home from work. So it's accessible. And then there are other access points or other two other rivers that I can explore just in my own city.
Mm-hmm. And you do sometimes take trips like to Lake Michigan or kind of other places like nearby with the intention of spending some time at the water to make work, right?
Yes, that becomes a different way to experience travel and a place for me. I love being by the water. And so having this project has allowed me to think about waterways and new places that we travel to. Or, you know, when I go to a wedding out of town and I know there's water, I pack some paper to go. And then very intentionally, we've planned trips as a family where I knew I could get to water, or I took a trip to visit a friend and knew I was going to be able to go to the water. So I packed and prepared papers for that. And it's also led to me working with clients who want site-specific pieces commissioned for their homes. So I'm working on a piece for a family that has a history of a certain lake nearby. Mm-hmm. And so I've been going up there to create work for that piece.
Awesome. Okay, Lisa, let's talk more specifically about the work that you make. Could you share a bit about your process and kind of how you've arrived to the work that you're making now, and maybe describe that work visually?
So I use both traditional cyanotype and light sensitive dyes to make sun prints, and I print on fabric. So mostly linen, silk, raw silk. And my most recent work, my kids actually make almost all of my sun prints. And I then use the fabrics that they create, the prints that they create, to make soft sculptures. So my most recent series, I called the pieces anxiety knots. So they're tightly bound soft sculptures that I created out of sun prints that my children made. So they're, for me, the process is not just the print and the end product, but there's sort of this process in between that I've really come to consider kind of performative. Mm-hmm. And I cut up the prints that my children have made, and I sew them up, and I stuff them, and then I tie them. And these parts of it have become really like important to me in terms of arriving at the final image. And I think having my children as collaborators has also become, it sort of started almost out of necessity with the pandemic and things. My kids were home and with me all the time, and they enjoyed it, and they always wanted to be involved. And so it really was just sort of a way to keep making while they were here. And now when I make work without them, there's like it's like a new learning curve now for me to work alone. So
interesting. Erin, has collaboration like with your kids ever been a part of your practice?
Yes. When they were younger, especially, I did a lot of projects that they were interested in. I made a lot of sculptural crayons and things that they could use and be part of where it was safe. They could, you know, I wasn't casting with resin, for example. Mm-hmm. It was something that they could be part of. And so the materials that I use definitely changed because I wanted to be creating around my children, because I couldn't go out to the garage and, you know, spend an evening out there. And I didn't want to spend that time away from them. It was a way to involve them in that time together.
Mm-hmm. Erin, I just want to ask you, because, you know, Lisa and I have kids who are a similar age, and your kids are about 10 years older than our kids. So just always looking for that kind of, I don't know, reassurance that like things open up, or, I don't know, like, what do you think about that? Like just the artist, kind of the stages of artist mother life that you've gone through, particularly in the last 10 years, like as your kids have gone from ages 6 to 16.
Right, girls, that's where I am now. That openness is starting to happen.
Yes.
And when they were younger, the other thing, my husband is also an artist. And so, but he also teaches full time. So we kind of understand what that need is to, we call it feeding the beast. We need to have that creative time. And when they were little, we very much loved our creative family lives. We did a lot of creative things together and then go to bed early. Mm-hmm. So we would have our planned studio nights and stay up late and be able to recover because we were younger than to get up and go teach the next day. And then as we had older children that weren't driving, but active, as my dancer would be down at the ballet till 8:45 every night. And so Jeremy loved to go wait on her and have time to draw. So he would take his, so it was ways to build it in at different times. But then we were also driving in the car till 9 o'clock every night. And so that made it more complicated in other ways to have that studio time in those very busy years. And I really felt an opening up when my daughter got her driver's license. So she's my oldest. So when she got her driver's license, that allowed me to have, I felt like just a breath after work. And I didn't have to run to get her, to take her to the ballet and then return to get her later. So that gave me a lot of new time that I didn't have before. And then my son turned 16 yesterday. So I know it's approaching for him. And as my daughter is planning to go to college next year, I find that this openness and time to work also helps to kind of soothe that maternal part of me that has to let them go, and that they're not hanging out with me. We're not doing all these great creative things as a family because they're busy and growing and moving on as they should. So it's kind of like this beautiful opening, but it's also helping me with the process, and that now I have this new thing to nurture because that element of nurturing is shifting. So it's kind of bittersweet right now, but it's also thrilling and exciting. And then it helps me be excited for their next adventures too. And I, for both my husband and I, we really put a lot of our extra art pursuits kind of on the back burner when they were little, because we knew it was fleeting. We would only have so much time to enjoy that with them. And that art would always be there for us. Fortunately, it's not like being a dancer, an athlete, where you age out of it and where you have, are injured. That is the gift of the longevity of an artist. So I really feel like I'm coming into this new time that's just been waiting in the wings.
Any thoughts, Lisa?
It feels really far away. But I think holding on to that piece of like thinking about the artist's life is the long game. You know, I've really been trying to think about that a lot lately in terms of letting go of the resentment that I might feel if I don't have a studio day for like a month sometimes, you know, because it just doesn't happen. And understanding, like you said, Erin, like my kids are only going to be this way this for so long, and I have my whole life to do this. So
I think it's interesting too, like you talking about your studio practice sort of being a balm for like the loneliness that kind of creeps in when your kids get older. And just, I don't know, it just made me think like how nurturing the studio really can be. Because even as a mother with three young kids who are not at that stage, like that, you know, just that desire for like alone time and the boundary of like being in there, you know, it's not, it's more than therapeutic. It's just, or self-care, like that's not what I'm saying, but just that the studio, I don't know, it's a place to like come to whatever stage that you're in, and hopefully you can like find what you're seeking, or at least find a place to let your mind process what you're thinking about or what you're going through. Like, I don't know. It was just, I just haven't quite heard of somebody talk about the studio in that way with your particular stage of like kids. So it was really nice to like hear that, that, you know, cause when our kids are so little, we just think like the studio is the place, like it's my safe place, but I don't know, for it to also be that, like when my kids are 16 and I have other things to worry about and process. I don't know. I just haven't really had that thought before, and it's really nice.
Well, good. The other thing that I find, because we are masters of juggling 5 million things, when that space opens up, it is just like lightning. You have the immediacy and the resources and the ability to focus in a different way that I just feel like when I just start to apply it, it just takes off, because I've had to manage all of these different elements. And so we juggle so many things. And once you start to not have so many things happening, but you're a master at juggling all of that, it's kind of like in your mind, you're still thinking about all these things you want to do when you go to the studio. So when you go, it is intense, it is intentional, and you feel like you can really accomplish something.
Artist mothers know there's nothing more important than taking care of yourself, because if you're not feeling your best, you can't be your best. Zambucol helps you feel your best with powerful immune support, powered by nature's superfruit, black elderberry. I'm personally so grateful for Zambucol and their immune system supporting products. I think about my health a lot and feel like the best action I can take, besides getting good sleep, is nourishing my body by consuming healthy things that support my immune system. Zambucol elderberry gummies taste great, and I love that they are low in sugar and contain no gelatin, since my family is vegetarian. It's so easy to get my kiddos to eat one of these gummies every day, and it helps me feel good knowing my kids have the support from products like this, especially in a season of life where reinforcing our bodies with healthy things is just on our minds a lot. Zambucol is a trusted brand. It's the original black elderberry and was developed by a virologist, so I know I'm getting a great quality product. Get 15% off your next order of $9.99 or more at ZambucolUSA.com. Use code ARTIST15 for 15% off. Just as a note, these statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Thank you, Zambucol, for supporting the Artist Mother podcast. We so appreciate you and the products you're putting into the world. Again, Artist Mothers get 15% off your next order of $9.99 or more at ZambucolUSA.com and use code ARTIST15 for 15% off. I'm curious to have both of you talk just a little bit about like what the cyanotype process means to you in particular. Like, I don't know. I just think it's interesting that you both have this like performance element to your personality. And then Lisa, you talked about like, you know, the sun prints and cyanotype, like being this almost performance or this like dance within the studio. And then Aaron, obviously, like you're talking about it from the perspective of like the water and nature and being a collaborator. Like, what is it about that process that you think maybe drew both of you to it? Or like, how did you land on this being the thing that is your language right now, you know, or what it has kind of become for you? Lisa, do you want to start?
Yeah, I actually landed on it because it was something I felt like I could do easily with a baby. I started sun printing when Greta, who's 7 and a half, when she was first born, and I decided not to go back to work. And I was like, I'm just gonna like get some stuff and I'm just gonna play around. And so like I could wear her while I would like go out to collect different items in nature and things. And then it just kind of became this really rhythmic part of our lives together, because as she got older, she would go out and collect things and she would save things and she would bring me things like, for your sun prints, mama. And then when Edie, my second, was born, I was still making sun prints, but I wasn't doing anything with them. It was just this thing that we would do together, but it was so central to our lives. And so the first thing that I ever made with the sun prints was baby bonnets for my kids. Mm-hmm. And so then for a number of years, I made and sold these baby bonnets and so then silk scarves and stuff. And, you know, had kind of fallen into this like wearable art thing and then got totally burned out by it. but I think this, like, being able to just kind of align that creative life with my family life made it feasible in the really early days and weeks and years of motherhood. And it's just kind of stuck. And now I just absolutely love the process of it.
And you did have a photo background. So like it wasn't like too far-fetched of there was that thread there, but definitely can see how like it is become the language because it's the process that is best fit in your life. Which is really,
yeah, absolutely. It really was just what made sense at the time.
Yeah. Erin, what about you? Like, how did you kind of land on doing cyanotype based work? And, I don't know if you have a photo background or if, it was just something that you kind of developed along the way.
I studied sculpture in undergraduate, and that was, I was always more interested in installation work and resin. I welded, I used resin. And then after I had children, I didn't really want to be using a blowtorch anymore. And I was concerned about the toxic nature of resin. And so I was searching. And Kaylin, I love seeing your exploration of fibers and textiles, because that was something too that I explored for a while, because it was non-toxic. Mm-hmm. I could use those materials around my children. So I was searching for a long time. And when it was over a decade ago, we were exploring a photography unit with older students and didn't have darkroom access. We didn't have technology at that point. And so I just got some of the Nature Made blueprint paper, and we used that to make some cyanotypes. And that's something that I've kept in my practice with children, and it's become a lot more play-based teaching younger children. And I then just started to experiment with it on my own, and I used fabric just like you, Lisa. I still do that as well, making different installations with the fabric. And it really came from a place of looking for something that was safer to work with, that was non-toxic, and then experimental. And part of my journey as an artist has been to be, I call myself a recovering perfectionist. And it gave me that experimentation and a way to let go. And even the process of it oxidizing over 24 hours, I really don't know what I've created in the moment. I have to completely let go of that. The collaboration with nature, the wind, the elements, it's all part of the letting go and the meditation. And so that's also helped me a lot. So it's interesting how the medium has also reflected my own personal journey.
Really interesting. Yeah. I love that element of art where, you know, as somebody who has perfectionistic tendencies and control issues about like certain things in their life, always wanting things to be the right way, or, you know, making sure everybody's cared for. And sometimes that honestly channels as like control. I don't know. Like, I think that like you talking about the process of cyanotype, and for me in particular, the language of abstraction, like never being this like concrete thing that we can make a stance on, but just having something be more about the way it feels or the way it makes you feel when you see it, or the essence of a thing. Like, I don't get that in a lot of other places in my life, you know? And I think I don't know, it's just one of the things I love about being an artist, because it just, it feels like I don't get pulled to that part of me very often. And this is like, I need that, you know, I need that enriching experience to be more human, I guess. I don't know.
I think it's interesting too, Erin, that the way you were talking about like the process of Sanotype and like a recovering perfectionist, because I often think about my process as helping me accept things about my motherhood journey that I can't control. Mm-hmm. Because like, I think about my son prince in the same way that I think about my role as a mom. It's like, I can set things up a certain way. I can, you know, guide something, but like, there still is such an element of the unknown. Like, how is it going to turn out? Is it going to turn out? And like in my work, I've often thought about how that parallels a lot of my experience in my like motherhood journey.
Yeah. I think too about the training in ballet and how it provided a beautiful discipline that has carried through my life in so many ways, but there is that perfection side of it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yes. It's very much part of the struggle.
Speaking of just kind of art and motherhood journey, Lisa, I just want to hear both of you talk a little bit more about what you feel like you need more of in your life as an artist and then also as a mother. I just think these types of questions are so healing because so many of us feel like we can't admit what we need and what we are trying to get more of in our life, especially as women. So if you're willing to answer that question, I think it would be really great. Erin, do you want to start?
I was thinking about this because I really need to just be patient with myself and accepting, because I still have a full-time job and children that I'm sending to college. So that's very much on the forefront of being a provider. And so, you know, but then I have this world of art opening up for me, and it's kind of all I want to do, even though I have a deeply rewarding and wonderful profession. It's this other side of me that I've opened up and haven't had the time for, that now I'm just so captivated with, that I really have to be patient with myself, that I can't do it all yet. You know, I have to let myself, you know, just pace myself a little bit. And a real classy connection here. I just keep thinking of like Talladega Nights and Ricky Bobby saying, I want to go fast. that's just how I get. And my husband will joke with me. He's like, well, you know how you get. And that's that, this force of nature, fierce determination that I just want to go. And I've had to use that in my life as a parent and as an educator and juggling all of these things and being able to save just a little bit of it myself now. It's exciting, but it almost feels like it could get me in a little bit of trouble because I just want more of it.
What about as a mom right now? Anything you think you need a little bit more of?
Oh, I'm just taking every moment. I'm taking a moment at a time. And the pandemic has been a real struggle for us as parents. And a huge theme in my work is grief and grieving. And through the pandemic, we've been grieving a lot with our children that have lost their time and place. And even as parents, I thought we were going to have all this time to do all the cool big kid stuff. And we didn't. And so there's a lot that I feel like we've lost. And so that is a constant struggle and something that we are all very attuned to nurturing ourselves and the mental health needs of our children and ourselves, because this is a very difficult time for our kids that are aware of things and have lost. I didn't think about the fact that it was grief that was also affecting my daughter when all of her shows were canceled. And then there's the fear that it will come again. And will I lose the rest of my senior year after I've just started to have things? You know, we have this great place and we have this great home and we love having people here, and we've had to go without that. And then, you know, I envisioned us having all of these kids throughout our house, and we've really missed a lot of that. So.
Yeah, I can't imagine the grief and the experience of having teenagers in the pandemic. Like, I mean, I, you know, haven't even gone there too much just thinking about it, because, you know, my own experience like is already so stressful, and everybody's just kind of processing their own like version of the pandemic. But man, to like feel like you've kind of missed out on some of those years where the public engagement and the community, like where you're finally like, I'm in community with my kids and my kids are becoming adults, and like all of that must feel like such a big loss.
Yeah.
Lisa, what about you? What do you feel like you need more of in your life as an artist and as a mother right now?
I think, so I have a studio in my basement, and it's great and it's awful. You know, I think a lot of people who have home studios have similar sentiments. I really feel like I need a studio space outside of my home. Also just a larger studio space. Like the more I think that my work progresses, I want to work larger. I want there to be performative elements to some of what I do. And I just don't really have the space to do that. And I think, you know, Detroit has a ton of art studio spaces, but like nothing really close enough to me to where I know that I would like go every day, you know? So I'm kind of in this weird spot now. But that is probably like the number one thing that I need in terms of like my artist side. And then I think motherhood, I feel like I really need more practice at resting. Like I have two really big feeling kids, and I'm like a very big feeling person, and we're all very highly sensitive. And so like I get overstimulated, they get overstimulated, and I just think that I have never learned, and I've never really taught myself how to prioritize some of like the rest and nurturing that's really required to exist that way. So I definitely need to, you know, make that more central in my, my mother life.
I believe that you have a garage attached to your house. You know, we're currently renovating our garage. So just
well, believe
just
me, I share
Aaron. Are you listening?
I showed Aaron my husband's name is Aaron. I showed him your garage and stuff. Yeah. But you know, we get a lot of snow up here. Well, usually. I don't know anymore, but you know, it's like a lot of car scraping if you give up your garage.
Well, I was lucky in that our cars, well, we only have like a single car driveway, so only one car could ever be in the garage anyway. And we, but it, our car, it like that garage is so tiny, our little Nissan Sentra like barely even fit in
there.
It was never like, we were never using the garage for the cars, but
believe me, ever since I went to Stay Home Gallery, I've basically just been like, let's get some quotes, because we live on an acre. We can put an outbuilding in the backyard.
Yeah, you can. Like, you can do it.
Yeah.
And so. And it, even if you don't like do water right away, or you know, I mean, you probably want electric, but running an electric line from the house isn't too crazy.
Yeah.
But like, you could totally do it.
Yeah. No, I know.
Okay. Let's talk for a few minutes about Instagram, just because I know you, Lisa, through Instagram, and we've talked many times about just how Instagram has been such a big part of our art career life. But Aaron, I wanted to have you start, because I know that you have really like dug into allowing Instagram to be an outlet for you to sell your work. You have an Etsy store, but I know you've had a lot of like clients kind of that you've picked up through Instagram. And So just interested to hear both of you talk, you know, just about your relationship with Instagram and kind of like, I know as artists, there's like the pros and cons of like wanting to be on it because we know it does a lot for our art career, but also there's like this push and pull where we just kind of hate it sometimes too. Erin, do you want to start and share just a little bit about your experience with your art career and Instagram?
Sure. When I was really thinking about taking the steps to sell on Etsy, because for me, that was a way to fund my work. Mm-hmm. So if I could sell work, then I could buy more paper because I just didn't have the resources to take away from my family to buy those things. So mm-hmm. when I started thinking about that, I talked to a friend who sells her work, and that's when she suggested just start an Instagram solely for your creative practice. And the best thing about that was I began to connect with the alt photo community, cyanotype artists. There are a lot of artists in Europe mm-hmm. that are exploring cyanotype, a lot of female artists. So the first thing for me was just to build a community that I had mm-hmm. while I was here and connecting with other artists and seeing how their process work. So it evolved from that, and then being as a way to kind of advertise or link to what I was creating on my Etsy, and then getting in contact with clients and collectors for my work. So I don't spend a lot of time with it. And I know there's a game to play, you know, that if you post it this time and that time, and I haven't even done that. It's just when I have something to mm-hmm. show or to work on or that I want to share. And it also involves a lot of my process, which people have been really drawn to seeing mm-hmm. me down by the water or the different locations. So mm-hmm. I just started as a way to share what I was doing, but it's really grown and I'm starting to think about it a little bit more as how to make this work. Mm-hmm. But I do really appreciate it and appreciate the connections and mentors that I've met and other artists that are supportive. And I really appreciate that aspect of it.
Lisa, what about you? What are your thoughts on your art career and Instagram?
I mean, I feel like I do have a really strong, like, love-hate kind of relationship with Instagram, because I think I can really easily get caught up in, oh, I have to post work. I have, mm-hmm. like, you know, feeling that need that I'm supposed to be sharing on some kind of schedule. And like you, Erin, like, I've never really followed the game, and it changes so frequently that, you know, but my, like, total love for it is just that I am so well connected with so many other artist mothers. Mm-hmm. And that it has been, especially through the pandemic, it's like been a lifeline mm-hmm. in so many ways. And so it's like one of those things where I would never get rid of it. You know, mm-hmm. I would probably never say this isn't worth it, you know, that mm-hmm. the return on investment or whatever isn't there. But, you know, I think sometimes it's hard to just think about making work and not worrying about how I'm going to share it, I mm-hmm. guess.
Yeah.
You know, like the, like thinking, I want to be able to think about my work only as work mm-hmm. and not content, you mm-hmm. know, like what part of this work am I going to share as content? I think that feels really messy to me. And I want to try to like not think about it that way.
Well, I think especially too, as like video-based sharing becomes mm-hmm. more what you're supposed to be doing, you know, and you both have this work that is very process oriented in a way that you could capture sort of certain elements of your studio practice, like more easily than maybe some other mediums. So I could definitely see how like that especially would feel, I don't know, like a slippery slope in terms mm-hmm. of like, what am I making and sharing about my process, and what am I keeping like just for me? And yeah. Do either of you have thoughts just about like keeping like a boundary about that? Or like, do you have any strategies for kind of resolving that feeling?
No, I mean, I think because my kids are my collaborators in so many instances, I've been really careful. I don't share my kids a lot on social media. And so I'm really careful, I think, not to kind of include that element of my process, really probably giving it as much weight as it actually has in my process. And I don't really know if that's good or bad or whatever, but I don't know. I do think it's really tricky. And I think too, sometimes it's like, you don't want to show everything because it's yours, you know? But I think, like you said, there is a lot about the process that is really interesting and visual. And it's like very time consuming. And like there is a lot that could be shared. And I'm still, I think, trying to figure out what that all is supposed to look like for me.
I think because I don't have a lot of time to consume it, or I definitely work on not spending a lot of time consuming it. I don't really enjoy making it either. So for me, it's more a reflection of what I want to do, because this is mine. This is special for me. I'm going to do with it what I want. You know, someone was telling me, oh, process videos are the way to go. And I personally don't enjoy watching them. Some people love them. Some of them are just mesmerized by it, but I don't feel the need to create those myself. Sometimes I do if I'm excited about that. If I'm excited about the element of creating content to document the process, then that's different. For example, with my upcoming exhibit, I'm creating small scannable QR codes so people can see the actual location where I created the image. And cool. For me, that is meaningful. And I'm excited about that, because of what that adds to the element of my show. But, you know, that's not something that I feel like I need to put all over TikTok or whatever. Because I'm just not that interested in it. So I'm like, well, then I don't care.
Well, I think especially the conversation about reels and like video-based sharing is, it really does feel more just like you are creating content. You're not just sharing your work. You're like, now there's this added pressure of like showing your process. And I do feel really resistant to that. Like, I will make a reel that shows my work. And it sometimes it's easy to make like a reel that is showing like large painting process, because all I do is put it on slow-mo, you know, and just like create a video. But like, you know, I've been thinking about that with my textile work. Like, okay, do I have to start like getting a camera set up and like, you know, piecing the work and whatever? And I'm not saying I won't do that, because sometimes it is fun to like see how a piece like comes together, but you know, it's like a different, that's like a different day in your studio, is like, you're no longer like making the work. You're like performing the making of the work, and like it really does mess with your head in terms of like the decisions that you're making, and kind of just, it doesn't like that sacredness, like I don't know, it's like, I don't know, it just, it changes something about the experience, you know?
Yeah. And I haven't made a reel yet, because I think I'm just like, I don't even really want to go there. Like, I'm already feel like I have to do stories and posts, and now I'm adding this third thing, and I don't really want to have to figure it out, nor do I want to now feel the pressure to also create this other form of content. You know, and I think for me, like, I also worked in branding and marketing for about 10 years. And so I like did this for a living. And so sometimes I can get really caught up in this idea of content, you know, and then like the branding around the content. And so for me, I think personally, having to say, this has nothing to do with content or whatever, like, this is something different, you know?
Right.
The thing I always return to is know your audience. You know, that's what I think about. Who is really interested in your work? And so the person who may be scrolling through the reels may not be particularly into my stuff. And maybe a collector would go through a different avenue. So I just feel like it's an extension of what I want my work to be or not be, or, you know, I don't put too much pressure on myself for that.
Good stuff. Which to all the artists making reels, you're doing great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No hard feelings.
Old lady up in here.
Yeah. All right. Just a couple more questions before we wrap up, you guys. This has been so good. Just wondering if you could share briefly about a moment in your art career so far where you've just been like, wow, like I'm doing it. I'm really proud of like what I've accomplished here. And like this particular thing feels like a really big win for me, Erin.
Oh, it just seems that I've let myself open up to this. And so anytime I just get something done, I feel like that because this is something I've been waiting on for a really long time. And so I'm very goal oriented. And when I set and meet that goal, that is so rewarding for me. But at the same time, you know, I met with someone who started collecting my work yesterday, and just having that talk with him and meeting with another creative person who wants to collect more artwork, and meeting with everyday people that are stepping into that realm of buying things because they like it and hearing how it impacts them and their environment is just really lovely.
Beautiful. Lisa, what about you? Just a moment that's felt like a big personal win or something you've been proud of?
Yeah, I over the summer I got an email from a curator in Detroit, and she was interested in hanging my work as part of a show, like the inaugural show at a new gallery in Ann Arbor. And that was the first time that I had been invited to a show. I've been trying to spend the last year like really getting plugged in here locally. Like I've applied to and been accepted to shows in other parts of the country, but I think because of the pandemic, it was really hard to plug into my immediate community. And the Detroit art community is so robust. So like getting the email, talking to her on the phone, realizing my work was going to be in the show, and then like going to the show and taking my kids, and it felt like such a big deal. And like really ticked so many boxes for me. So that was really phenomenal.
I love that. I'm so happy for both of you for those things. And I just think, you know, just processing like the good stuff that we're doing and celebrating our wins is just something I want to try to encourage more artist mothers to do, because we do so much, and like we don't often have the time to even like process it and celebrate it, you know. We got to do that more. Okay. So this episode will be released at the beginning of the year, just wanting to hear a little bit about your inspiration for like, what are some of your goals that you're working towards right now for your art career, or maybe for this year, 2022, anything you're hoping to accomplish, or kind of a goal or a couple goals that you're thinking about. Lisa, start back with you.
I would really love to do another residency, either like with my kids or without my kids, I'm not sure. And I realize planning anything at this point is like filled with so much uncertainty, but I would like to have more art residency experiences. And I have a lot of new ideas, and I think I just want to spend a lot of time looking inward and focusing more within myself and my studio space to kind of explore some of those things.
Awesome. Erin, what about you? Some goals that you have, you know, that you're going to be trying to achieve in 2022?
Yeah, in the first 6 months, I have my first solo show at ArtLink. So I'm in the process of curating and deciding what I want to be in the exhibit and to prepare elements for that. I'm creating a fabric installation piece to go with it as well. And then I'm really excited about creating some larger works. And I'm intrigued about this idea of connecting directly with collectors. And just from my background and training, it's always been the gallery circuit and to pursue it that way. But I'm kind of a blaze my own trail kind of person, and I am really excited about some of the opportunities I have and what it is to just connect with people directly who want to collect art. because we've all been in our homes for a long time. And I think that's really exciting for artists that we have a new way to navigate that outside of some of the previous systems.
Awesome. Can't wait for your show at ArtLink. Okay, final five. Just wanting to close with some quick questions to help those of us listening to get to know you a little bit better. We'll start with Erin. Who is your biggest art crush?
Heather Day. And I got to meet her.
Yeah, she did that. She had a solo at Fort Wayne Museum of Art. I actually caught the show, but it was like it came down like the month that we moved to Fort Wayne. So yeah, I wasn't there for like the public parts of it, but that's awesome.
Yeah, it was incredible.
She's a great artist. Lisa, what about you? Biggest art crush?
Oh, this was hard for me, but I feel like I had to think about who am I crushing on right now, you know? And Caroline, and I'm maybe not saying her last name, she's Swiss, but Denervad, she, do you know her work? She combines dance and painting in this like incredibly natural way that I just cannot get enough of. And I would like to incorporate more performance and explore that side of my work. And so I'm just like really obsessed with her work right now.
Love it. Okay, back to you, Erin. What is your favorite place to travel or a dream trip you'd like to go on?
Oh, a dream trip. I want to surf in Hawaii.
Oh, that's awesome.
In my next life, I'm going to be a surfer girl. And I have surfed on both coasts. And I would love to be in that water in Hawaii.
Well, and you would make art too, obviously.
Right? Yes, obviously.
What more could you want? Surfing, art making, and, you know, good tropical drinks.
Right, right.
Lisa, what about you? Favorite place to travel or a dream trip you'd like to go on?
I mean, I would go anywhere right now.
Right?
Like my husband works for a Canadian company and we were supposed to go to Canada for his holiday party and we ended up not going. And I was like devastated to not drive 3 hours to like, Canada.
I can't get in the car. Right.
I don't know. I would say maybe like Scandinavia is probably like top of my list right now. But I have like a million places I would want to go.
Yeah. Okay, Erin, a book or a film that is big on your inspiration list?
This goes all the way back to my early years. The book Significant Others by Whitney Chadwick. It's about intimate partnerships. So it's artists and writers who had relationships and partnerships. And as a young person who was madly in love in college with another artist and, you know, who then became my partner in life and parent, co-parent, you know, this was something that as being creatives ourselves and I was full on riot girl feminist in the late 90s, you know, I wanted an equal partnership. He wanted an equal partnership. And so then how do we do that as creative people? So I took a lot of inspiration from that book, but it was also slightly defeating because it really hadn't happened. So I knew it was up to us to make it happen.
Awesome. I've never heard of that book. That sounds great.
Oh, that's a good one.
Lisa, what about you? A film or a book that is just kind of high on your inspiration list?
I think like in the last 2 years, the book that I keep giving people, which I think because I can't stop thinking about it and probably I'm going to reread it for the rest of my life was Birds Art Life by Keo McClear. I don't know if either of you have read that. It's she's a writer and she like takes a year off and decides to learn how to bird watch. And she finds this like mentor and it's such a quiet book with so many reflections on the artist's life. She's a mother, a lot about like how to observe. And it would just like, it's probably my most dog-eared book. Like I have so many little bits that I come back to in it.
Bird Art Life.
Birds Art Life.
I have not heard of the book. At first, when you started talking, I thought you were talking about Bird by Bird by Anne Lamott, but I'll have to check that out. Okay, Erin, what's your favorite meal?
Oh, fresh seafood. As a landlocked Midwesterner.
Yes.
Yes, fresh seafood.
Love it. Lisa, what about you?
Yeah, I was going to say oysters.
Oh, funny. Great. Look at you guys. Ballet, oysters.
I know.
We got it all in common. Okay. And just always like to close by giving you an opportunity to give a shout out to someone who supports you in your work. Erin, who you want to give a shout out to?
Oh my gosh. I can't keep it to this one. Oh, I have such a great family and wide circle of friends that's been so supportive. And, but you know, my partner, Jeremy, my art nerd, that's been our name for ourselves for 25 years, being able to make a life and art together is just such a gift.
That's awesome. Lisa, what about you?
Yeah, I feel like everybody that gets asked this question on your podcast, it's like, there's so many people. But I also, my partner, Erin, who is not an artist, who is an engineer, but the lengths that he goes to both support my work and try to understand my work and all of these things, it's just so meaningful to me. But I also have to say, like, my artist mother, basically like art wife, Cassie Arnold, her and I over the past 2 years have just developed such an incredible exchange of experience. I think she's just really been my go-to person when I like hit a block or have a, like, what do I do in this situation? Or, you know, anything like that. She's just been an invaluable part of my life these last couple of years.
She's a good egg. I love Cassie.
Yeah.
Okay, guys, where can people find out more about you and your work? What is your website and Instagram handle, Erin?
My website is erinpattonmcfarren.com and on Instagram, epattonmcfarren. So that is the place to go for all the recent updates.
Etsy. What's your Etsy?
So my Etsy is Lumina Blue. Lumina Blue.
Cool.
Yes.
Lisa, what about you? What are your handles?
Yep. So I'm lisaalberts.com and lisaalberts.art is my Instagram handle.
Awesome. Love it. Well, let's get together in real life. We're all only,
we're not that far,
you know, 2.5 hours away from each other. Maybe Lisa, you can come down for Erin's show in May. We'll see at Artlink.
Let's do it.
Artist Mother Meetup, Midwest Meetup. We'll do a Detroit trip. We'll just
That's what I want. Detroit
come
art
up
trip.
Here.
All right. Thank you guys so much for such a great conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you both so much.
The Artist Mother podcast is curated and produced by Kaylin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton. Editing and mixing by John M. Butine. Please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.